Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kendall Roden, Cynthia Krang, Kale Teeter, Evan Vasilik, Russell Young, and Sajid DeMello discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please visit our website at azpodcast.com.
Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode 298, recorded on the 24th of September. On Teams with me, we have Sujit, myself, Cynthia, and our special guest, Art Klobistin. I hope I said his last name right, but if I didn't, you'll see him say it the right way. Before we dig into high availability and disaster recovery and storage, which we'll be talking to Art about today, we're going to go over a couple Azure updates. Sujit, do you want to go ahead and start?
Sure. And I noticed there's a couple in here which are close to me. You know, we use the video indexer service in all of our podcasts. That's how we provide the transcription of each podcast on the website. And so there's a couple of updates on the video indexer today, which I'd like to talk about. One of them is, typically you could tell video indexer, okay, you know, everyone's talking French or English in this particular audio clip, and therefore it'll use that as a model to detect what the text is. But what happens if there is multilingual discussion going on? You know, some people are talking English, others are talking French. And in the past, it wasn't possible to do that. Now you could tell it that it's a multilingual discussion, then it would automatically figure out the model, correct model to use for that segment of the audio, and would do the transcription of the text correctly. So I thought that was pretty cool. And it will then translate everything into the English, you know, into all French, into one particular language. So kind of does it, all of it for you in one shot. So that's one update. The other one is an interesting one is to detect animated characters.
I didn't know that, like, they were looking for human features and that cartoon characters were difficult.
Yeah.
Or maybe not just cartoon, but like any animated character.
Any animated, yeah. I guess if you have like a Pokemon character or something like that there, it should be able to figure it out, right?
Yeah.
So now that's in there. You know, it could detect, I guess they've got a set number of models on, you know, on the kind of characters that they can detect, but the popular ones will come up. What else do you have, Cynthia? Is there anything that you want to talk about?
So there are two. One is that the Azure CLI support for Azure HD Insights is now GA. So now people are able to administer and do a number of configuration changes through the CLI instead of having to go through more air quotes manuals. And then the other thing is that the Azure Advisor Alerts are now in preview, which allows people that are using Advisor to get recommendations on maybe different SKUs or getting recommendations on how to get cost savings. You're actually now able to configure alerts to let you know how you can optimize your Azure resources and your subscription.
Yeah, that the one on the AZ CLI with HD Insights, that was interesting. I did not realize that was not part of the AZ CLI until I saw that write-up. So,
well, maybe it has been public preview for a while, and now it's finally...
Could be. Yep. It's good to see that in there, though. It's good to see that in there.
CLI is a lot of fun and makes your life or my life a lot easier.
Sure. Hey, Evan, just joined the fun.
Hey folks.
Hey, Evan, we stole your updates. So,
yeah, we've already stolen all your updates, so...
Man! I knew I should have kept some back.
All right. I think we covered all of them, right, Cynthia?
Yeah, I think so.
All right.
Do you want to go ahead and introduce yourself and let our listeners know what you do?
Sure, absolutely. Happy to. Thanks for having me today, guys. So my name is Art Klobistin. I work in Azure Storage. I'm product manager. And my primary wheelhouse is high availability and disaster recovery. So all the things related to this space, I'm driving the capabilities and feature set in. So things like, for example, zone redundant storage, or recently introduced geo zone redundant storage, or account failover. All these features are I'm working on actively. So that's what I do.
No, you know, Art, when I think of storage in Azure, that's such a fundamental service. You know, I think everybody assumes it's always going to be around, right, no matter what. Like from an engineering perspective, what do you guys have to go through just to keep that, you know, service, like, highly available? Let's just say, you know, make sure that it's up all the time. I'm sure there must be, like, an extra level of kind of effort or scrutiny around availability as it relates to storage.
Yeah, of course, Jed. Can't agree more. It's indeed a fundamental block for everybody, for every single customer that we're dealing with, internal or external. And in terms of the, I guess, the efforts that are put into the having the platform being available, you know, there's of course a lot of resilience that we put into place. You know, we make sure that we reuse multiple copies of the data to make sure that, you know, it's available, not only just simply raw copies, but also, you know, we use erasure coding to increase durability of the data. And actually, you know, the design of the overall Azure storage is around durability, kind of as a central place kind of thing. So what I mean by that is, you know, like, for example, if we were thinking about some regional disaster that's happening, as you might know, since we designed for durability, we'll be doing our best to restore and essentially any data. So basically avoid any data loss, make sure that, you know, the customers really get their data back should any disaster, even though it's pretty unlikely, you know, that the entire region gets wiped out. But still, that's what we shoot at least for. So, yeah.
And I believe, like, the durability numbers are, like, what, 10 nines or something like that, right?
It's 11 nines for the basic one, correct. Yeah, so which equals 11 to, like...
11 nines? Yeah.
It's a lot. It's really a lot.
That's got to be down to, what is it, like, when you get down to 6 nines, you're talking minutes per month.
Well, this
per
is
year.
Durability, remember, right? This
oh,
is,
yeah,
this
that's
is
true. Yeah, yeah.
The data loss.
You're right. You're right.
But availability
right.
is pretty high, too. It's, although it's like 3 nines, it's still kind of pretty high, you know, in terms of the hours downtime you experience throughout the month.
Yeah.
All right. So I had a question, and this is really kind of how we met. So for customers that are thinking about HANDR, and if they are in a specific region already, finding out that a certain feature isn't available yet, what is the recommended path forward? Do they move to another region, or are there other things they could do to kind of remediate that before the region becomes generally available for what they're looking for?
Yep, makes sense. Thanks for bringing this up, Cynthia. This is a question we actually get a lot on a daily basis almost. So there are a few aspects that we think about, and, you know, based on, of course, the customer's unique requirements and their scenarios, and multiple things that we can do in this space. So one thing that that can be an option is that what we recommend is going to the region which is nearest to the region where the customer wants to be located. And we want to make sure, of course, that it's not only that their storage needs are fulfilled, but also they may have other dependencies such as compute. And so we want to make sure that there is enough capacity in that region to accommodate that need. So that can be option number one. And so, you know, in the future, if the customer still, you know, needs to be in that specific region that they originally planned for, we can, you know, think of some migration story there. That can be option number one. Another option could be, which I think we execute fairly often, given, you know, Azure grows and we constantly invest in having more regions with zonal presence, right? So what we can start with is we can think of, let's say, if a customer wants some high availability within a region, but we don't have zones there just yet, but we know that they're coming, we can, as a short-term solution, we can stripe their solution across multiple storage accounts, being them being LRS, so that they still kind of get that zonal or kind of like zonal deployment in that region while waiting for, you know, Microsoft to actually GA zones in that region. And so once we get to the point where we announce zones in that region, which we of course know up front, at that point we seamlessly transition the customer from those multiple striped accounts to like a single ZRS account. This is, can be kind of another option that we can pursue.
And that's this is key, right? Because I think, you know, you started this, you know, a little earlier you mentioned that, hey, the odds of losing, you know, an entire data center, you know, while theoretically possible, it is very, very low, but it can happen. You know, typically when we think about failures that are much, relatively speaking, much more likely to happen is to lose a portion, right? And so by looking at the zones or doing the striping, right? You get that extra layer of insulation and protection without really going to the extreme that not everybody necessarily wants to have to implement or manage.
Exactly. That's exactly the idea behind it. Yep.
How, when you talk to customers about that, I know I always struggle because all this is so hypothetical, right? Maybe we lose a data center, maybe we lose, and then we have, like we have lost data centers for small chunks of time,
yep.
Right? When I know what I struggle with when I talk to customers is how to figure out where they really are on that scale, right? You know, everybody says, well, our system can never go down. But then when you really push them on it, well, but are you willing to pay 2x? Well, no, not really. And then there's others that say, hey, I'm doing fill in the blank that like this absolutely cannot go down. Like people's lives might be at risk or something like that. And to them, any extra redundancy cost is worth it. Are there kind of certain questions that you ask people when you walk through that? Or is it really a progression and a conversation just trying to understand what it is they're trying to achieve?
Well, I guess it's a kind of tough question, I would say. Definitely, there's no like single answer to that, and you know, not a single kind of framework that we're typically using. Of course, there are some standard questions like, you know, what are your RPO requirements or RTO requirements? So basically, how fast do you want to recover if you lose availability, or how much data are you willing to lose should anything, you know, occur? So these are some standard questions. And
is the answer ever not?
Exactly. That's what I was alluding to. Yes. Then the typical answer would be like, I'm not willing to lose anything. And I'm like, you know, willing to restore in like whatever minutes or even, you know, sub minutes time frame. And at that point, you're like, okay, let's talk more. And so it's more of a progression, really. And so I guess, you know, me, especially being in the high availability disaster recovery space, I think this is the world. And again, this, like you said, these are tough conversations. Well, I have a mindset, and I strongly believe that, you know, we should work a little bit backwards in the sense that what I start with, it's much like investment in security space. I believe, you know, like it's hard to justify the ROI. There's no real ROI on that. The ROI becomes, you know, when basically you avoid a breach, at that point you can say, oh yeah, my investment in security was worth it. And it's similar to HADR. You can never justify or like clearly say, oh, I will do zonal redundancy. I will pay 25% more, but this will give me, I don't know, X amount of money in the future. You cannot really do that. But what you can say is that, you know, but there was a disaster which brought entire Azure for, say, hypothetically, a day, and my business was still running and I didn't lose any money. I didn't lose any customers and things like that. So this is my kind of indirect role. And so having that mindset in mind, I start this conversation kind of with, you know, with that in mind with my customers and tell them, like, let's make sure that, you know, we are resilient enough. And then let's find a way to optimize further and make sure, you know, that we bring the cost down. And I can give you an example, like, for instance, we have the zonal redundant storage, right? And, you know, customers still need a DR story. But when they do a DR, you know, again, a possibility of wiping the entire region is very low. So even if we lose the zone, you still continue to operate. But what if something happens? And so, you know, still there's a chance that the entire region goes down because of the hurricane or things like that. And so they want a DR story, but, you know, to at least somehow absorb that cost or make it a little bit like less costly for the customers, we're thinking about the way, oh, you have a DR story to another region, but let's make it a little bit cheaper than what you are paying in the primary. And so we have a way to tier down that cost in the secondary region so that they, you know, pay less and eventually kind of even out the total cost of ownership or total cost of their storage solution. So, that's, I guess, but again, like you said, yeah, Evan, it's a progression always, and it's a story in progress, and, you know, customers always evolve. They have, you know, they start offering much higher SLAs to their customers, and so their demand grows for Azure, and they request for more. So it's always an in progress thing.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, this has always been a pain point, right? This isn't new to the cloud, right? I think back to the on-premises world. I mean, I come on our support and regularly we get cases. Hey, we had something happen and we failed over and the failover didn't work. Exactly. So now we're doubly down, right? At least now it is easier because, you know, some of the things that y'all worked on in storage, right? The read-only GRS, like all that kind of stuff, it makes it much, much easier for customers to do that flip over and know that they may need to, you know, change the connection string in their code, or but they don't have to worry about whether or not storage is going to be there and functioning.
Exactly.
So I had a kind of fundamental question about storage. I know there's typically three copies that are floating around. So in the past world, we deal in terms of update domains and fault domains. Is storage thought about in a similar way? Is that what happens with these three copies?
Excuse me. Absolutely, Sajid. Yes, that's exactly how we work, or how we, I guess, approach the overall paradigm. We follow the same deployment practices, so we would not, be deploying, let's say, in all regions at a time. But specifically to your question, we place these three copies of data across different fault domains and upgrade domains. So whenever something happens, only one copy gets affected at a time. Either we're upgrading, only one copy kind of is in that upgrade domain which we're upgrading at the moment, or if something fails, also only one copy can be in that fault domain that partition that we lost, or maybe rack that we lost, things like that. So and depending on the rack size, of course, there can be different numbers of fault domains or and upgrade domains, but the fundamental idea is that yes, all the copies are basically in unique places so that we avoid that single point of failure when we upgraded something, caused a bug, and then all the data is gone. So absolutely. Right. And like I said, on top of that, we follow the safe deployment practices where we have certain waves of regions, how we basically upgrade them and make sure that if we by any chance there's some self-inflicted issue, we catch it early on and we don't affect all the customers in the world.
Okay, so that was going to be my next question. So when you extrapolate that to zonal or GRS, does that mean there's three copies here, three copies there, three copies in somewhere else? Is that how it is? Or is this three copies across global?
Yeah, got your point. So specifically talking about GRS, we have, I guess, six copies total, three in the primary region and then three in the secondary region. So that gives you you can say that it's six copies total, right? But essentially it's three in the primary and three in the secondary. And in the case of ZRS, it's the same three copies, although they are spread across availability zones. So you're not really having them in a single storage stem, like for example, in GRS primary you do. So they're really spread across multiple availability zones, which are a few miles apart between each other. And so they have separate power, separate cooling, things like that. So which means that, even if the entire DC storage stem goes down or we lose power, whatever happens, you still have two zones operating. So you just continue to read and write as you normally do.
Excellent. I know you mentioned about account failover earlier, and that's not something that I had heard before. Can you explain that?
Oh, sure. Yeah, happy to. And I was planning to bring this up. Evan was talking, he comes from support. I'm coming from support too, actually. I used to be in the field for almost 7 years with Microsoft, talking to customers every single day. And so the point I'm trying to make is, being in that space, DR story, customers would typically present us with, perfect disaster recovery plans and things like that. And then when it comes to have you ever tested it? Well, I would say in 80-85% of the cases, we would get no. And so, which means that effectively, these plans are typically, I wouldn't say good for nothing, but, without proper tests, it's really not that good. And so, with that in mind, we introduced this account failover feature, which essentially allows the customer to fail over their GRS or Array GRS account and also GZRS. This is new, this new redundancy type that we introduced. So it allows basically to fail over your account from your primary region to the secondary at any point in time, basically when you feel like it. And so, yeah.
I was going to say, and this is huge because if for those, as much as we hate to bring up painful history, when South Central went down about a year ago, that was one of the loud resounding pieces of feedback we got from customers of if they could do their own failover, they would have potentially gotten their business up and running faster. Right.
Exactly.
And then y'all and the storage team did a great job of immediately taking that and turning that into this feature you're talking about. Right. So this is kind of a really good example of us listening to our customers relative to how they want to manage their DR. Right. And being more self-sufficient from it rather than relying on us.
Exactly. And then, as you can imagine, many customers really honor availability over durability because, for various reasons, they have some, data that they're getting, updated fairly quickly and fairly often. So losing, 2-3 hours worth of data may not be really as an issue for them as losing availability for 3 hours. And so, yeah, I cannot agree more.
And so, Art, that's very interesting. So, you can, now the customer can fail over when they want to, but you know, how do they fail back, right? Like, how do they know that, hey, the previous region or the previous, you know, the previous region is now back up in sync with the data?
Yeah. So here there are, I guess, multiple aspects. So one thing is, you know, if the region is completely down and Microsoft actually announces basically the disaster and so announces region as lost, at that point, what we're thinking about, and again, this is something that we are kind of, this is work in progress, because the immediate pain there was that, you know, customers didn't have the ability, so we gave them the ability to fail over. That was kind of step one. Steps two and three is, so step two would be to, once we bring back the region, the primary, the former primary region, we're bringing back online and we basically reestablish the pairing. The thinking is that we would automatically convert those accounts to GRS. This is not something that we have implemented just yet, but this is kind of the way we think about this right now. And we're actually, of course, actively seeking feedback from our customers these days to kind of understand how they would want this to work for them. You know, would they want to stay LRS? When you know, they want to convert GRS and fail back, or just convert to GRS and stay in that region? Again, that, you know, it depends on the architecture, and you know, depends on many multiple different things. And so I like I said, the thinking is that we want to automatically convert them back to GRS to make sure that the customer has the protection that they used to have before the failover happened, and then let them switch that, flip that bit, and actually you know, do the fail back. We'll see basically as we start the rollout, the regional rollout of the failover that with the current flavor, and we get more feedback from the customers, we'll see, you know, what they think about it and how they want us to do that. And, you know, based on that, I think we will define the next set of investments in the area.
So it's both the automatic failover. Sorry, I just wanted to wrap that up. Cynthia, it's both the automatic failover as well as the custom initiative failover.
So automatic in the sense, it's not that automatic failover, but more so an automatic reboot strap, so that, you know, when the region is back online, you don't have to worry about converting your account to GRS. It's automatically there, but then you need to, you know, make the call whether you want to fail back or not.
Got it. Thanks. Go ahead, Cynthia. Sorry about that.
No worries. So for customers that are looking into HRMDR, like, how do they make their decisions, and what are some common pitfalls that you see when they have some sort of HADR strategy and that ended up not working for what their business needs?
Yeah, so I think the biggest flaw that I see so far, and I think we could do better in this space too. I mean, we as at Microsoft, like, we're trying to kind of have this holistic story all up, and I'm also working in this space. But the point is, there are a lot of dependencies that the customer sees. So it's less about, you know, being storage specific, like, because in storage, well, you have this pretty, well, more or less at least clear, you know, set of capabilities that you can rely on. You can choose redundancy, you can choose zonal deployment, you can, you know, you now have this account failover. And there's, of course, a lot more investments coming in this space. So I think that that story is pretty clear, and there's progression, you know, from least protective to the kind of the most protective approach. Now, where we see the flaw, or where we see the kind of the issues or risks or bottlenecks, is that the customers don't sometimes consider all the dependencies that they have. And that's what I was alluding to when talking about the, you know, choosing the region. They may not know that, oh, when I fail over my account in case of the disaster, I need to also fail over all my compute clusters, and I need to use, say, Azure Site Recovery for that. But for me to fail over my compute, I need to have my compute reserved in the secondary region, and not everybody does that. So which means that, you know, when the time comes, a lot of the customers start kind of trying to fail over all their compute clusters to another region, and, you know, it has only so much capacity. So if it's not reserved, you know, you can get into the situation when you basically don't have resources in that region, right? And so again, my point is that, you know, the customers need to look at this whole HADR story holistically to understand what other dependencies there are, and that's the biggest kind of issue that we see so far.
I think the interesting thing, and I think the thing that, you know, you mentioned it, but I want to make sure that kind of our audience kind of hears that, you know, all these things that you're talking about rolling out and the feedback that we're, you know, definitely looking for, customers still have to go try this, right? And it not only gives us the chance to hear that feedback, but it also checks their own failover stuff. And so we absolutely, like, I can't stress it enough for customers that are looking at this stuff, just go schedule some time and go try it. Because if you don't try it, you will have a failure and you won't know. And you'll be pushing that button, just hoping, and that's not a good place to be.
I cannot emphasize enough, yes, how important that is. I agree, Evan. Yes, and we actually do that on the regular basis within storage as well. We bring zones down, we bring regions down, we test all those DR capabilities that we have for our customers on a monthly basis. And so I think this is extremely important for all of our customers, of course, to actually test what they have and what they think that would work. And we definitely are happy to help, you know, bridge any gaps that they have to make sure that, you know, their DR plan is solid and everything is working as expected, at least like for 99%.
Awesome. Great. Thanks, Art. That's good feedback and discussion. Anything else you want to share with us in terms of upcoming updates to storage?
I think there's one last bit that we kind of indirectly touched upon, which I want to, you know, briefly introduce and also kind of, you know, hear what customers think maybe later on is one other areas where we see a lot of feedback and a lot of kind of demand is what we have today is a notion of paired regions with Azure Storage. So essentially, if you're using GRS account, let's say in US Central, then you're all the paired region would always be US East 2. And so it does not work for all of our customers. And some customers want to have, you know, their own region of choice. And also another kind of scenario here would be that the customers wanted to distribute their data across multiple regions of choice for local reads and local writes. So it's also kind of part of their either DR story or even kind of, I guess, proximity story. And so what we're working on in this space, it's called an object replication service. I'm like basically trying to essentially allow customers to replicate their data at the scope of their choice, which is at the container level to the region of their choice, anywhere in the world and multiple regions of their choice if they choose to. And so I was wondering, so basically one thing I wanted to do is to essentially talk about this and, you know, tell that this thing is going to go into preview fairly shortly. But at the same time, I would like to also understand, you know, what customers think, what kind of scenarios they have in this area and, you know, see if they have any questions or particular maybe asks in that space, which we can fulfill. So I'd appreciate that.
Okay. So Art, for this new feature, is it best for people to reach out directly to you?
Yeah, that'd be actually great. I'd love to connect with the customers. And so, yeah, definitely feel free to share my email.
Well, Art, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Thanks, Art.
Thank you very much. Art. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org. Under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.